Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to Torture Cast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! Let's go, Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is Torture Cast.
Welcome, everybody, to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm flying kind of lead tonight, which is unusual. My name is Chad, and I'm joined tonight by one Eric Nathanson. No Willie or Ben tonight. So, Eric, how you doing tonight? Thanks for joining us.
I'm glad to be here, Chad. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well. I'm feeling really positive about the Giants, a lot more positive than I've felt recently.
Yeah, a lot more positive than recently. I mean, aside from the result of tonight's game, the second game tonight, they really have hit a pretty good stride right now. And if you guys are just joining us live, by the way, we are live. So anyone joining us live can do so at youtube.com or torchcast.com. And we have it streaming right there for you. You can also call in at area code 415-799-SFG1. So I don't know, Eric. Did they win six or seven in a row?
Yeah, good question. I don't know. They're allowing some of the stats. I'm not quite sure how to let that happen, because it's like it was pointed out that because people like Panic made an appearance in the game, does that mean their debut is retroactive to May 22nd? But if they weren't on the roster, then they couldn't have been. So the stats count for today. So I'm not sure how that works, because even with Hunter Pence, I don't know if it extends his hitting streak.
Yeah, it gets into like alternate dimension and third realities and weird stuff like that. Yeah, because Tim Hudson got the win for that game in May, and he almost got the win back to back. So that would have been like one of the most unusual.
Actually, he got
two
the
wins
no decision.
In one day.
No, he got the no decision.
Oh, did
in
he?
Colorado.
Oh, he yep. started that game, but he got the no decision, right? That's
yeah,
right.
AFL
he was out when it was still
win.
Tied. That's right. AFL got the win. He did start, though, both games.
Yeah, he did, technically speaking. Strange enough that he got two no decisions in one day.
So those of you who might be a little confused what we're talking about, today the Giants, of course, they just wrapped up as a very successful homestand going 6-1. They had won six in a row going on the road, but they had to complete a game that was suspended on May 22nd when they were in Colorado due to rain. And at the time, they were tied at 2 in the bottom of the 8th with Colorado up, or bottom of the 7th, I believe, with Colorado up. And they completed that game prior to the regularly scheduled first game tonight or today. And the Giants did pull it out with a Hunter Pence single that broke the tie, and they ended up winning it 4-2. So officially, it goes in the books as a win on May 22nd. Therefore, their winning streak actually still stands at 6. Because yeah. That doesn't get tacked on. It's really weird, but that's just the way it works. It was the same thing with their whole Cubs series as well. They had won two or three in a row before they resumed that game. They lost it, but they still had a winning streak. So a little strange. But that kind of rolled into the second game, or the first game of the actual series. And unfortunately, the Giants ran into the buzzsaw that is known as Coors Field, where it just sucks the humanity out of almost any team there, including Colorado themselves. But it is just, it's a place. You don't know what the hell's going to happen there. And tonight was just another one of those examples, you know. 7-2 lead. The Giants built a 7-2 lead tonight in the sixth inning and quickly evaporated. And they had a nice little rally in the ninth, but obviously things didn't work out. But as far as tonight's game, the loss, I mean, what kind of positives can you take out of this, Eric?
Well, the thing that sticks out to me the most, specifically, not even just today's game, but But a week ago, the one game they lost to Colorado is when they give away outs, they give away runs. It happened during that, I don't know, I think it was the sixth inning when they put together a few runs and then Machi came in and gave up three runs.
Yeah.
Earlier today, it was errors. So the positive thing, I know it sounds weird, but the positive thing is when you know the defense is shored up, the Giants are going to do it, which they showed during this past homestand, every other game besides the one where they didn't play well. I mean, that and the fact that they scored 9 runs. I know it's Coors, but they were clicking on all cylinders coming in. And that offense really seems to be firing right now. Everybody, Joe Panic has fit in perfectly in the two spot. So I'm take out the positive that it's 9 runs, and we all know it was Coors Field. You can't give away outs. That and Romo ends up blowing the game in the long run.
Yeah, it was frustrating to watch. I mean, I was at a Labor Day party, and I showed up when it was, I think, 4-2 at the time, so it was still a reasonable game, and then they blew it open 7-2, and me and this other guy were joking. We were saying, oh, 7-2 in the fifth or the sixth. Well, it's Coors Field. You never know. And you kind of say that half serious, but also half kind of like, it's a 5-run lead. Come on, guys. I mean, you're a high-quality elite team. You need to nail this down at this time of the year. You need to – oh, and there it goes. Oh, there. Oh, damn it. And it just
– Coors Field.
It was almost like,
yeah,
you could predict it.
You're
just sitting there going, okay, I know this is – oh, yep, there's a hit. Okay, there should be another hit here. We should probably throw in an error. Oh, there's the error. There's a couple walks. Oh, there's the bomb that puts him ahead. Yeah, this is going pretty much as planned. Just, I mean, it's amazing how that place just consumes the Giants, especially this year. I mean, I don't have the stats right in front of me. I should have looked that up. But how many games have the Giants lost? I can think of 5 right off the top of my head that the Giants have lost directly to the Colorado Rockies, in which they were leading at one point in the game. So you have tonight's loss where they were up by 5. You have the first game of the last home series where they gave away 2 runs with 4 errors and lost the game 3-2. And then you have the 3 games that the Colorado Rockies swept from the Giants back in June, in which the first 2 games they had leads in the 9th, and in the 3rd game they had a 3-run lead in the 8th, and they lost all 3. So that is 5 games right there. That is incredible.
I got 6. May 20th at Colorado, they walked off. Romo lost the game.
That's right.
Hawkins got a win in that one as well.
That's right. Hawkins got the win there. That was just off the top of my head. So there you go. 6 games yep. this year, and they find themselves 2 games back of the Dodgers. So just do the math there, okay? They should have – I mean, look, every team's going to blow games like this every year. It's going to happen, and it comes in bunches. But to lose 6 games – in that fashion to one team in 1 year is off the charts outlier. It really is. I mean, it's they only play each other 19 times a year in the West, and they've already lost 6 games in less than those 19 in horrific fashion. If you only lost 3 of those 6, which is still very hurtful and painful, the Giants are in first place by a full game right now. And those are the types of games that a team will look back, you know, on a season and go, only if, and it, this could be one of those years if the Giants don't win the West or don't make the playoffs.
It could be. It's funny because you did ask for something positive out of the game. The top of the 9th inning when the Giants came and Panic blooped one, and then Posey was able to put one up the middle, and mm-hmm. then Perez came around to score. It showed me that this team seriously realizes they're in a dogfight. And every little scraping and every little bit counts. And it's been good to see that.
Yeah.
That was really positive to see them get those 2 runs. I mean, they didn't even have to have the opportunity to blow it in the 9th inning. Forget about the 5-run lead that they blew.
No, absolutely. They did show the moxie to come back.
Yeah. They put it together. It seems kind of like, especially with the way the starting pitching went last week, we see what happens when the Giants put together hitting to go with the starting pitching being that good. I mean, the Giants had a 3.23 ERA in August. It's probably why they were 16-11. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty much why it's still positive coming out of this. They don't look like they're going to slow down. And the other positive is they only have 2 more games against Colorado this season.
I know it's a few games ago they said, oh, they have 30-something games left. But the good news is that 20 of them are against the Arizona Diamondbacks, the Colorado Rockies, and the San Diego Padres, who are, you know, all under .500. The problem is that they've had tough games against Colorado, which they've now continued. And San Diego obviously has had an incredible second half thus far, and they took 2 out of 3 from L.A. Thank you, San Diego. So yep. This whole, oh, it's going to be easy against those three teams is not going to necessarily be the case. And L.A. has the same schedule, so it's kind of a balanced thing for both of them. It's just, when are they going to hit the Rockies and Padres and Diamondbacks if they're hot or not? And right now the Rockies have been extremely cold, but they caught lightning in a bottle tonight. And, you know, otherwise they would have been one game back. Tonight.
Well, they still gained 3 games from the end of play last Monday to the end of play this Monday, and they haven't been able to put together a streak like that in a while. So all in all, you know, it was a very, very positive week for them to finally show that they're ready for the pennant chase, because I think some people, including myself, when they were 5-6 games back, were ready to say, you know, okay, let's play for the flip game.
Exactly. I think a week ago we were talking about that. They're 5.5 back, and we said, well, you know, at least they still have a shot at the wild card. They're commanding the second, you know, place on that right now. But here they go. They took 3 out of 4 against Colorado. They should have swept, but they took 3 out of 4 at home. And then Milwaukee, the first place team, comes in, and they absolutely manhandle them. I mean, that was a thing of beauty, and the Giants definitely have caught fire lately. And like you said, their offense is clicking on all cylinders. They scored 13, 3, 15, 9 in their last 4 games. So their offense is doing fairly well right now. I mean, tonight's loss, you really just have to pin on the bullpen and, you know, maybe one mistake out in the field. But otherwise, the offense was fantastic. And like you said, that's a great positive sign going into – you know, the last 26 games they have right now.
You know what it really reminded me of watching them dismantle Milwaukee this weekend was those last 3 games in the 2012 NLCS against the Cardinals. How it was, yes, the back was against the wall, but the Giants didn't just come out and win every game. They won every game pretty much convincingly. After the Zito bunt and everything, and once they got back to AT&T, game 6 and game 7, it was like in control the whole way. And that's how the Giants play best, is when they get out in front and are able to, you know, follow that. And it's funny because Milwaukee actually jumped out in front 1-0 when Bumgarner ended up loading the bases in the first inning the other day, but he got the double play to just allow one run, and you got to get the great ones early, and he was able to, you know, stay in control the rest of the game while the offense went to work once again.
No, it was great.
Buster Posey has been carrying this offense in such a way that I didn't expect. I thought his legs were tired. I thought all the elements were starting to catch him. And then all of a sudden, the last like 15 games, he has caught fire, something fierce. And it doesn't matter if he's playing first base or catcher, he's hitting the ball.
Yeah, Buster Posey is getting hot when the time is right. And he's single-handedly won several games so far in this last week. We went to the game on Friday night, and that was where he went 5 for 5. And, you know, Bochy pulled him, rightly so, when they were up by 10 runs or whatever, but half of me wanted to see him try and get that 6th hit to establish his career high. But it wasn't like he was going for the cycle or anything. He absolutely needs to get hot right now. He's one of those guys, along with Pence, along with Pablo, the meat of the order, and they have been hot. All of them have been hot. I think Posey's, you know, he's just about to round 300. Pablo coming into tonight was hitting 291 along with Pence. These guys all have a shot at hitting 300 for the end of the year. And if they can do that, that not only means, hey, look, they got 3 starters that hit over 300, but it also means that they were hot in the last month, and most likely that's going to translate into a playoff push. So this is what we need from these three guys. And it wouldn't hurt to see Crawford do what he did tonight with 3 hits and other guys to kind of pick up that slack.
Yeah, and can you believe it? Crawford didn't get a hit in either shellacking of the Brewers.
No.
He didn't get a hit in the 13-2 game or the 15-5 game.
Yeah. He's the guy that was shut out both times.
Yeah, he comes through with, you know, today, and suddenly Coors Field might have been the thing to lock him back in. He might, you know, be starting to use the center of the field better again, and that's why he's dropping the bat head on the ball there.
Yeah, shooting for that 235 average this year. So,
yeah.
All right, we have our first caller tonight, and he called last week. Michael, are you there?
Hey, yeah, I'm here. How are you guys?
Hey, pretty good, Michael. How about yourself?
Doing good, Mike. How you doing?
Good. How's it going, Eric? Long time no talk.
Going good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, it's been a crazy week of baseball. You know, I was talking last week. We're like, oh, crap, we're 5.5 out, and you know, what's going to happen? And next thing you know, these guys come out and they wake up after that four-error game and win like six in a row, which was kind of a little unexpected, but I was kind of happy that they actually just were able to just pull together, play good baseball, hit the ball, like minimize the damage on defense, and don't commit any crazy errors. And Posey got hot, like you said, you know, which is nice. I think we need that right now. I think the three of them, Pence, Posey, and Pablo, are like, you know, if they can continue to ride this out, we can do some damage, hopefully, maybe catch L.A. But, you know, the only thing I'm worried, my concern right now is just the bullpen and how vulnerable they are, because I know in the postseason you need to have a solid bullpen if you're going to make, you know, if you want to make some noise. And, you know, I know it's chalking up to Coors Field, but I just hope, you know, they can just hold it down after we get out of Coors and play L.A. and Arizona, and hopefully we can shut down teams and, you know, get the win when we're supposed to win, not, like, blow a lead and blow a save.
Yeah.
No, well, the funny thing with the bullpen.
Oh, go ahead, Eric.
Bullpen is they've been a top five bullpen all season long. Yeah. The funny thing about the bullpen is they've been a top five bullpen all season long. And it's kind of surprising when we look at that stat. It's things like Romo today that blows it out of proportion. And I think that speaks more towards why did Bochy use Romo for a second time in the same day? If this guy was too shaky to be your closer long term, why were you comfortable with him in high leverage situations twice in one day?
No, totally. I mean,
it speaks to that.
Yeah, I don't think Romo does well at Coors anyway. His slider doesn't break; it just floats, and everybody just eats him up there. So I don't know. I just feel like you should just shelve him for 2 days, and then we'll go play in Detroit. Hopefully, he can.
Well,
his slider will work there.
I have it listed here under the armchair manager section of our podcast.
Yes.
And, you know, it's why did Bochy put in Romo in the ninth? And also, why didn't he order the intentional walk to Blackman because they had a righty up on deck? Yeah, and then that's, I don't know who they had on the bench, but as far as I read, they didn't have any lefties left on the bench. So it would have had to have been the righty that was coming up after Blackman. But Romo this year, and granted, this is after tonight, where he pitched, you know, two-thirds of an inning and allowed a run. But right now, versus Colorado this year, is a 14.14 ERA. He's 1-3. He has one save in four save opportunities. Seven innings pitched, 12 hits, 11 earned runs, three walks, two home runs, .387 batting average against. And at Coors Field, he only has 1 2/3 innings pitched, so it's small sample size. But he has four earned runs and five hits for a 21.6 ERA. And my question is just, and they were talking about this after his blown save against Colorado, or two of them, is, look, maybe he just has a bad, you know, vibe against Colorado. Maybe Colorado just has his number. And now he's in Colorado in a tie game. He already pitched earlier in the day. And, I mean, granted, Casilla did too. But they had other guys in the bullpen, especially with the September call-ups. Not saying they should have pinned that pressure on a rookie, but just knowing his splits and knowing his history with Colorado, I was shocked to see him in there. And then to get all the way to two outs and runners on the corners after he allowed, you know, a couple of hits, to see Blackman up there, and even though he was 0 for 5, he's had an incredible year, and he's a lefty. And I'm just completely surprised they didn't order the intentional walk with the righty on deck, because, the you know, pushing the runner to second doesn't matter. The winning run's on third. So it sets up the force play, it gets the righty up there. So I was pretty upset that Bochy didn't order it. That being said, he might have told him, hey, look, because there was a conference on the mound before that, don't give him the intentional, but give him the unintentional intentional walk, right? Pitch around him, that kind of thing. Because that first pitch that he hit, I mean, let's all be honest, that was a ball, okay?
Yeah,
it was.
That thing was low in the zone, it was at the ankles, and he raked it with a golf club. And so you got to tip your cap to Blackman. But again, you know, I wouldn't have been against the intentional walk. So maybe that's where they were going in the unintentional route. But either way, Blackman, you know, did what he's supposed to do.
I honestly think it all starts back with putting Romo in that situation in the first place. You talked about a slider not doing anything at Coors Field.
Exactly.
Casilla keeps the ball down in the zone. And granted, as you just mentioned, Blackman's hit was a low pitch, but that might not have been the same scenario had Casillas started the inning in the first place. I felt like he's more effective to go to there. I love Casillas. I know he's had every bump in the road now and then, and people get – I love Casillas and think he would have been the perfect choice for that situation. Mm-hmm. Instead, I don't think you can throw any of the kids in there. Machi had already been burned up and given up the three runs. Mm-hmm. And Romo pitching early in the day, I mean, he isn't always healthy. I know he's had knee problems in the past, and you have to wonder if the fact that he heated himself up early and then had to cool down and then had to heat himself up again, if maybe that was part of it, and maybe he wasn't necessarily as, you know, comfortable with his slider or as pinpoint with his control.
Yeah, you know, Affeldt had pitched, obviously, in the shortened game.
Yep.
Lopez pitched in this game, gave up a couple of runs. But they still had a couple bullets left in the holster. So I was surprised to see Romo in there. But Bochy is one of those guys who likes to get his players back up on the horse. And he had a successful outing earlier in the day. And he has this bug against Colorado. I don't know. Maybe that had something to do with it. But either way, once I saw Romo in there in the ninth, I was a little upset. If it was the 12th or the 13th and they were low on pitching, what are you going to do? You know, they got to throw a guy in there. But I was really surprised to see him in there, aside from Casillas or someone else. It is what it is. You know, you could pin Bochy's tenure with Machi earlier in the game. Maybe Machi shouldn't have been in as long as he was because they had, you know, that four-run inning. After Hudson left, and you know, I was sitting there going, "Hey, let's get the pen going. Why are we getting this guy in there?" But you know, we trust in Bochy. he's done good for the team for so many years, and he's not going to hit 100%. And I think he might have whiffed a couple of times tonight, and that's going to happen.
Yeah, it all shakes out with the talent. The Giants' talent is displayed that they're going to continue to carry it. I mean. This past week, you said last week you guys were talking on the show about how they were like 5.5 back and all that.
Yeah, exactly. A week ago.
Now they're only 2 back of LA, a game and a half ahead of St. Louis for home. I'm sorry, ahead of Milwaukee for the wild card. 3 ahead of Atlanta. 3 and ahead of Pittsburgh. Yep. Suddenly they're in a position of power. It like took 1 week at home to turn that all around. And it's absolutely shocking for a ball club that was playing horribly at home leading up to that. They were like 500 at home until they ripped off a 6 straight to end the homestand. Is that what it was?
Yeah, the 7-game homestand.
They're now 38 and 33 at home. So they were they were actually under 500. They were 32 and 33.
That is
and
correct.
They're 37 and 30 on the road. I think that once they get past Colorado, it's funny, they have Detroit this weekend. These games are going to be a couple more 9-9 games. We got, Vogelsong pitching one of these. And then who's starting tomorrow? Where are we in the rotation? I forgot with all these games today.
Petit tomorrow.
Yeah, it's Petit tomorrow.
Oh, it's Petit tomorrow. Oh, yeah. Petit will probably give a good outing, but Vogelsong got lit up with that like inning and a third in Colorado earlier this season.
In fact, this is a perfect segue into one of the questions that you had here in the notes, Eric, and that is the Dodgers are actually shuffling their rotation. They inserted that rookie tonight in order to have the big three face the Giants next weekend. So the Giants are not doing that. They're going to have, it looks like right now, if everything stays the way it's supposed to, they're going to have Bumgarner, Hudson, Petit against the Dodgers. Or Lincecum if he comes back in the rotation, but probably Petit.
You know, it'll be Greinke, Ryu, then Kershaw.
Yeah. So, what do you guys think? Because this is what Mattingly did to start the second half, and it worked perfectly for them. They swept the Giants at AT&T. So, do you think this is something that Bochy should be trying to realign his stars for, or is it just stick with what you got, trust what you got, because it sends a message to those pitchers that you usurp from their positions against the Dodgers that you're not good enough?
I think,
but we know.
Go ahead, Eric.
No, you're good, man.
Oh, I was going to say, didn't we have a different lineup offensively, or we had a different lineup back like a month and a half ago than we do now, right?
Oh, well, sure.
Well, Yeah. But, I mean, let's
but just talking
be honest,
from the pitching
the Dodgers,
aspect. Yeah.
Yeah. The Dodgers offense is so good that it's just the pitching matchups are part deciders in some of these games because the talent levels are like kind of even when it comes to lineups. I don't think the Giants need to counter. I really don't. Having Bumgarner be the first starter in the series, I'd rather have him start game one than him face off against Kershaw in game three or something like that. Yeah. Especially the way Bumgarner's been throwing the ball. Anytime you can get him more opportunities to toe the slab is good. Plus, if like PV or somebody hits it on the next time around, plus Hudson. Do we all trust Hudson in a playoff situation? I think I do, and I think Bruce Bochy does too.
Yeah.
So there's absolutely no reason to take him out of a pennant race to bump him back or anything like that.
No.
I think the Giants are doing it just fine because there's no need to juggle it. It's not that the Dodgers are like worried about the Giants. I think Mattingly just wants to make a statement because those first three games out of the six remaining are in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And those last three games that you referenced were also in San Francisco. And I think he's got his eye on that as far as, well, if we can step on their throat while in their home, you know, in their park, then, you know, we can take the division the last 2 weeks. So I can see why Mattingly would do that. But it's like you said, Bochy made some wrong moves today, but we've seen him make a ton of these kind of moves over the years.
Yeah, he tends to not reset his rotation. The only time he's done that was in the 2010 playoffs, and you know, worked out fine for him. But he typically stays with the rotation that is set. He lets the cards fall where they may. And you know, look, Bumgarner is pitching in the series already. That's great. That's what we want. And I agree with you, Eric. I think that if you take Bumgarner against, you know, Kershaw, I mean, it looks like he's on his way to winning another Cy Young. I don't think there's any doubt in our mind that he's the best pitcher in baseball right now. You might not want to send your ace against him, you know, because it looks like you know, you probably got an 80-90% chance of losing the game against Kershaw, and it's not going to improve that much with Bum pitching. But if you get Bum against, you know, Greinke or Ryu, however you pronounce it, you have probably a better chance of securing a win there. And then the middle game is a rubber match, and hopefully Hudson takes it if he gets into his form that he can. And that's what the Giants need to shoot for. We talked about this during our bonusode on Friday, and they have six games left against the Dodgers. If they can win four out of those six, so that's two out of three at each park, or you know, a sweep and one out of three, whatever, they will gain two games in the standings. Guess what? That's exactly what they're trailing by right now. And so that would mean the Giants would only have to be one game better in the standings outside of those six games to win the division. And that's completely within the grasp of reality right now. When it was 5.5,
yeah,
you know, it was like, oh, shit, they're going to have to sweep all six games to have a shot at this. Yeah. But, you know, they've run into a little bit of a streak here both ways, and they're two games back. Hope, you know, they should have been one game, but this is the reality we have. And if they can enter that series next weekend, you know, one, two, or three games back, kind of in that range.
Stay in a stone's throw.
Yeah, they're right there. And if they take two out of three, suddenly Dodgers are going to be sweating. And that's what they need to do. And I think that's really important because they still have two against Colorado, and they got three in Detroit. And look, those five games are not easy, man.
They're not.
If they take three out of five of the next five, that's a victory as far as I'm concerned. And
well, the other thing with the immediate future is the Dodgers are playing the Nationals for two more games, and they just lost against them tonight.
Right.
And the Giants have to know in their head that, okay, LA's playing a first-place ball club. We're playing the Rockies.
Yeah, we're playing the Rockies.
We've got to take
care. Look what happened tonight. Whatever.
Right. That's what they got to be thinking, though, is we got to take care of business. That's what the ninth inning kind of looked like to me. Like, hey, let's wake up, guys. You know, our competition's playing, you know, good competition. We're playing these guys. Let's take care of it. And that's what it seemed like clicked in for them. For the immediate future, that bodes well for them because I can't see the Dodgers taking 2 or 3 from the Nats now. So the Giants need to concentrate on winning these two games to make it the 4 or 5 of 6 for the week that you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, if the Giants can nail down these next two wins against Colorado and LA splits, then they go into Detroit one game back, and that's going to be huge. And Detroit hasn't been playing the best of baseball right now. They've actually been hitting some real big bumps in the road, and they're tied or close to Kansas City right now. I can't remember what happened tonight. I don't think they're as dominant as we all feared they would be. Of course, look what they did 2 years ago. I mean, holy crap, they swept them in four games. But the fact of the matter is that you just don't know what happens in this game. Look what Colorado, one of the worst teams in baseball, has done to the Giants this year with those six come-from-behind victories. And you got them sweeping the Milwaukee Brewers at home. I mean, you just don't know, man. You have no idea what's going to happen from game to game. And they just got to put themselves in a position to be in it down to the last week of the season. Otherwise, like you said, they might be shooting for that one game crapshoot, which, you know, you could throw Bumgarner in that game and you get one bad bounce, one bad call, one lucky home run off the foul pole, and your season's over. That's it. Mm-hmm. So, Michael, what are as we wrap up for you here? What are your concerns for the Giants, or even the silver lining for the Giants as they head in here to the last 26 games of the season?
I think just summarizing like what you guys said, you know, we need to take care of business. Like, we need to beat teams like Colorado, Arizona, San Diego. Like, just, you know, win at least a series on those teams. And we have to just find a way to scrap. And this team has been doing that. They've been grinding, you know, not giving up on games where, you know, last year kind of like they were just like, okay, that's it. You know, kind of like different vibe this year than it was last year. But, like, they in the back of their minds, they know that the Dodgers are right there. You know, and I think we can match up against them. I mean, series-wise, we're right there with them. I mean, they scraped us last time, but I think – we learned a lot from them from that series. I think that series next week is going to be a battle. I think, my opinion, I think they're all going to be like one-run games just because of the way of what's at stake, which is kind of like what typical Giant-Dodger games are usually like. You know, they're always down to the last inning, so which I think will be a good thing for us. But we need to play playoff-caliber baseball, and with the Dodgers coming and with Detroit on the tail coming up soon, you know, that's a good way to measure ourselves to see where we stand. If we can beat those teams or at least, you know, try to win a series against them, I think we'll be okay. I mean, I'd rather take the West. I don't like the one-game crapshoot, but, you know, I know how Bochy is. Like you said, he just likes to kind of just put it out there, and it's up to the guys to do what they want.
Yeah, and if they're going to be stuck with the one-game crapshoot, that's what they're stuck with. It's better than not being there at all. Look at the A's.
Right.
They They're one of the best teams in baseball. They have the second best record in baseball, and it looks like they're going to be relegated to that one game crapshoot. And that's just the way the second wild card works. So, well, Michael, I want to thank you for calling in again this week, and I'll be in touch with you because obviously we're going to be at those games on the 10th and the 13th. So maybe we can hook up there. So
yeah, definitely. You guys have a good one. Thanks for letting me call in and chat baseball with you guys for sure.
All right, thanks a lot, Michael.
All right, take care. Thanks, Chad. Thanks, Eric. Take care.
All right, so that's Michael McKay, one of our regular callers. He's a season ticket holder there with the Giants, so he's always at the games and very knowledgeable about the Giants and definitely a passionate fan, so we thank him again for calling in. The wild card system, I'll bring that up again because we talked about it in our bonus-sode on Friday, just me and Willie at Zeke's, and you're familiar with Zeke's there. It's a great little hangout. I think we must have left some sort of radioactive presence or some filth there because every single time we go to that bar after games, be it a Tuesday night or a Friday night on a holiday weekend, that corner booth or table has never, ever been occupied, no matter how crowded the bar is. It's incredible. I don't know what it is. It's almost like we reserve it.
And what Chad's talking about is like it's almost like an alcove off to the side of where the rest of the bar opens up to, and he's right. It's just like one little pocket, and you're kidding. Nobody has ever been there when you guys get there.
Not one time in the 3 years we've been doing this. Not one time.
Wow, you guys should contact Zeke's, and maybe they should start sponsoring the torture cast.
I know, right? They know us really well now, so which is really great. Now, when we did record, it was fantastic. First of all, I talked about this on the bonusode, so I won't go into too much detail. But for those of you who did miss the bonusode, the 280 here in San Francisco was closed for the weekend for repairs, a seismic retrofitting. And they said, oh, the traffic's going to be epic. It's going to be the worst you've ever seen. There's a Giants game tonight. Come early, that whole thing. Well, I usually like coming up early anyway, so I can do the Bochy pregame conference and watch BP. So I came up a little extra early, assuming the traffic was going to be bad for getaway day, Friday, commute, Giants game, and the freeway's closed. So everyone has to go through the 101. Well, it actually wasn't that bad. I got off on 3rd Street after Candlestick Park, where the Giants, of course, used to play before 2000, and got to the park at 2:30, you know, just about 4.5 hours before game time. But it was really, really cool because by the time I got in, I saw that Manny Pacquiao and Chris Algieri were down in the cage taking BP, and I had no idea that was going to happen tonight or that night. So I quickly ran down there. And they didn't even rope us off, right? You go right up to the cage. So it was right up the cage, taking pictures of, you know, it was really cool. Manny Pacquiao can't swing worth shit, though, by the way. It's a good thing he's a boxer. And he's so tiny, but he could kick my ass. It just doesn't look like he can. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, I could just hold you away from me, like as you swing and not be able to hit me. But I know he could literally kill me and cave my skull in. But, Will Clark, my favorite player of all time, was standing just to my right. And so much of me wanted to just ask him for an interview. And I said, okay, I got to do it. But he did some photo ops because half the Giants were out there. Pablo and Pagan and Morse and all these guys were out there because they're huge Pacquiao fans. And so they were all taking selfies and passing their phones around to the reporters going, hey, take a picture of me. They were like little kids. It was actually really cool to see. Kind of that, you know, we get starstruck with the baseball players and other people, but they're starstruck because of Manny Pacquiao, who's like half their size. So Marty Lurie, who we did interview last year, real great guy. He's a, you know, local lawyer who turned into a baseball broadcaster 20 years ago, and he's one of KMBR favorites. They even had a Marty Lurie bobblehead night last weekend. He came up to Will Clark and said, hey, can we finish? And he's like, oh, yeah, let's finish. Apparently, their interview was disturbed by the Pacquiao presence. So I sat behind them on the back dugout bench, and they were on the front dugout bench. And it was really cool to hear the end of the interview. But then when he hit the off button, he was just shooting the shit with Will Clark. They were throwing F-bombs and cussing, and it was just great to hear these really cool baseball stories from the heart from both guys. You know, Marty with his extensive baseball knowledge and history, and then Will Clark with all of his euphemisms and experience. But once he was done, you know, I kind of waited. I just went over and I said, hey, do you have 5 minutes? And he's like, yeah, sure, no problem. So I did the interview, which was, it was really hard to not like piss in my pants and spit down his throat because I was spittling so much. But
am I really talking to you right now?
I know. It's one of those things, right? Where it's like I met him twice when I was like a teenager or preteen, and now I'm like, I'm in temperature. And it was fantastic. He was super gracious. The interview was actually very good. I think I did okay for myself. I was a little excited, talking a little fast, but overall it was all right. So if you guys want to check that out, that's there. So going up early really paid off. But one of the things that I asked Will Clark about was, in fact, it was my second to last question, and it was about the wild card. I said, look, in 1993, you guys had probably the best year of any San Francisco Giants team in history. They won 103 games. They've never won 103 games before that or since then. And yet they didn't even make the playoffs because that was back in the two division days and Atlanta won 104. So the Giants played that last series in LA, 4 games. They won 3, but they lost the very last game of the year. And the Braves played the Colorado Rockies.
Their expansion.
Yeah. Inaugural. Exactly. Their first year in the league. And they swept them. So, in fact, the Braves played the Rockies 12 times that year. And they did not lose one time, not once. They were 12-0 against the Rockies. And I remember saying, why couldn't the goddamn Rockies win at least one goddamn game against the Atlanta Braves? At least they would have had a playoff. But regardless, you know, the Giants didn't make it. It was one of their best teams of all time. That was the first year Barry Bonds was on the team. the wild card they would have benefited from, because clearly they would have been the wild card. And he said, yeah, I love the wild card system. We would have made it. It would have been fantastic. I said, well, what about the two wild card system with the one game playoff? And he says, I hate it. I don't like it at all, because it gives too many teams a chance to get in. And, you know, a team like, say, the Giants from 1993, or this year, the A's of 2014, yeah, they're going to be probably 5, 6, 7 games better than their opponent that they play in a one-game playoff. But yet that doesn't matter. Yeah, they might get home field advantage, but it's just for one game. And they go into the playoffs even if they win down their ace, who they have to throw, presumably, in that game. So, yeah, he said, you know, I don't like that. And I have mixed feelings about it. I think I understand Major League Baseball's sentiment. First of all, you get more teams with a chance. You get more cities, more fans, more revenue, more trades at the deadline. All of those things generate the excitement. You also get the fact that the winner of the wild card, presumably, will be now at a disadvantage because they've probably thrown their number one in that playoff game. And now they have to go into the NLDS or the ALDS down their ace, who only can pinch one time instead of twice. So I do understand some of the benefits to the series. I just wish it was probably three games. And I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, I don't like it. I like it and I don't like it. It's kind of strange in that respect.
Well, because it might give the Giants their ticket to the postseason, right?
Right. Well, I mean, it's not only that. To me, it puts a greater emphasis on winning your division, and division is the teams that you play the most throughout the year. And if you are the betterment of those teams and then the rest of the competition as well, you know, you win the division, so you get the automatic berth into a series. But I don't think that the penalty for being the best second place team should be to play like a coin flip game with, like you said, one team could be 5, 6 games better than the other team, but the only home field they have is for that one game. It doesn't stretch out over any period of time whatsoever. So I don't like it in the sense, but I mean, you think back to 2012, and aside from Atlanta Braves fans, I don't think anybody can really remember that the Cardinals played in that wild card game and then gave us that epic NLCS. You know, if I don't think people remember the wild card game, I could barely tell you who was in it last year. And I think that's why I don't like it, is it seems important, but in the long run, I think we just forget about it. And the bottom line is win your division. So I kind of like it in the sense that it forces you to win your division, but I hate it because it's one game for everything, and you should never have one game for everything unless you're on equal footing, like they would have been in 93.
I totally agree. I have no problem with two teams that are tied for division lead or wild card or whatever position. And they have a one-game playoff. It's like, okay, you played 162 games. You're tied. This is the only resolution to this problem. That's okay. But, man, that's really going to suck for the Oakland A's this year. Even if they win, it's that disadvantage of having to throw their ace, they have like four aces, by the way, but to throw their ace in that one-game playoff. And it's probably going to be against Seattle, like Felix Hernandez. Or Detroit. They could face, you know, a Porcello or a, not Porcello, he's not even on the team anymore. Verlander or whoever.
Scherzer.
And it's very, very frustrating because I think one game there's just too much that can happen. Even in a 3-game series, it's too much that can happen. In fact, the first division series I wish was 7 games, not 5, even though the Giants have benefited from that the last 2 playoff runs they've had. But the fact of the matter remains that the Giants are potentially going to be benefactors of the system this year. Obviously, if they're the number one wild card, they are not, because the old system, they would have been right into the division series.
All right.
But with the new system, you can get ousted in one game. And so that's kind of the rub that I have. I really don't like this new system. And some people argue to me that, well, you know, the wild card should not go into the playoffs as strong as the division winners, and this is where what their penalty is. Well, okay, fine, but sometimes wild cards actually have better records than division winners.
Yeah.
So why are you penalizing them there? Sometimes, you know, the wild card team is going to be 6 or 7 games better than the number two seed. Yep, they got to play them and they can lose. Is that really fair? Because now you're not even saying, well, you should have won your division. Well, okay, yeah, you should have won your division, but you didn't. You still finished 6 games better than this team. Why should they get in based on one game? And the Houston Astros and the Colorado Rockies win games. You know, anyone can win one game.
Yeah, it's almost like guilt by association. It's like you weren't good enough to be the division winner, so we're going to lump you in with everybody else, basically, and say that you only have one shot. You're only on equal footing with these other teams. You're not on equal footing. I mean, like you said, there's been teams where that's the whole reason the wild card started in the first place, though, is because the Yankees cruised to a wild card berth back in, I believe it was 2011, and it took all the drama out of it, and everybody wants the drama. And honestly, I mean, we've had great drama the last few seasons down the stretch, and we're probably going to have great drama this year. The Pittsburgh Pirates, you know, last season coming down the stretch.
They won their wild card game, yep.
Right, the way the Rays put it together. So, like, on an overall whole, it's like a good for the game thing. But as a fan of a team fighting for that division crown, I'm with Will Clark. I absolutely hate the idea of playing one baseball game to determine whether or not you get to play for the championship.
Yeah, and the problem I have with it is the NBA and the NHL I hate because more than half the teams make the playoffs, and the number 8 seeds are commonly under 500 or often under 500. And that's a travesty to the sport. Now, the benefit is that 99.9% of the time they are ousted in the first round because they are playing the number 1 seed, who is much, much, much better than them. However, it's not a one-game playoff. If it were, there would be a higher percentage rate of number 7 or number 8 seeds beating number 1s. And that's what I don't like about this system, is in no other playoff system other than the NFL, because it's always one game, right? The NFL is not series based, but in any other sport that is series based, they do not have one game playoffs other than tiebreakers. And that's where you just throw it out the window. You're just like, well, shit. All right. Anything can happen. I guess it's a coin flip. Whatever. It's all good. The whole 162 games riding on one game. Okay, fine. Whatever. That's cool.
And then to think that like somebody can make a difference in that game who might have hit 183 on the season, you know what I mean? But that's the point, is they could have made a difference at any time. Mm-hmm. I think as Giants fans, we're gonna be analyzing this for the next 5 years, because it doesn't look like the Dodgers are going away, and it doesn't look like Giants are going away. I think that this rivalry, specifically for the division, is going to be alive for a while. So it's a good problem to have, as much as we kind of pick it apart in the first place.
Yeah, they are not the Houston Astros. So
exactly.
All right. So we talked about the rotation, shuffling that. So let's talk about milestones galore all over last week at AT&T Park. You wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, it was strange, and it fit right in with their winning streak that, like, every single game last week, the Giants seem to have some sort of milestone. You know, Hudson had his 2000th strikeout. Then, what was it? Petit had his 46 batters retired streak. And then Bumgarner, or the day before that, Bumgarner had his, you know, perfect game opportunity. It seemed like every night, Posey with his 5 hits the night you were there, PV with his no-hit bid and getting his 2000th strikeout. And it was just weird because it all lined up with everything – the stars aligned with all the games as well. And it's like, to me, the milestones galore all over AT&T last week, it was kind of strange, but they all came in contributing fashion. None of them were dead, empty, shallow milestones. It wasn't some guy, you know, hitting some mark on a floundering, like you said, Astros team in the middle of September. These guys all did this in the thick of a pennant race, and it kind of goes to show the makeup of the different types of guys that are on this team. And it just stuck out to me that in the same week that they hit all these milestones was the same week they really started to put it together. And it almost seemed to be like they said, okay, we're this good. So it just stuck out to me over the last week, because the other thing that really did, and I didn't put it in, is the fact that they did gain 3.5 games in the last week.
Yeah, they did. 3.5 games in a week, and just so much excitement from PB's no-hit bid to Bumgarner's near-perfect game, which I also asked Will Clark about that hit by Morneau because it was a great pitch. And yeah, so I asked him, you know, was it more luck or more skill? And it was more of a bait question. You know, I kind of knew the answer, but, you know, he said, oh, that's skill. That's why he's leading the league. He stayed through the ball. But then you got, PB's 2,000th strikeout, Bochy's 1,600th win. You got all of these things happening this past week. It's been pretty incredible. It's been fun to see and watch Giants baseball over the last 15 years, especially since they've moved to this park. If you think about the number of events and milestones and amazing memories that have transgressed or transpired in this park, it's astounding. It's obscenely way more than almost any other park in such a short period of time. It really, really is. Yeah. And you have your historical ballparks, which of course have your amazing memories and the Yankees and those kinds of things. But my God, the number of events that have happened at AT&T in just such a short period of time. You look at other teams like, oh, let's look at the Rays at the Tropicana Dome, and let's look at the Astrodome, and let's look at Minute Maid Park, and, well, yeah, a few things have happened there. Not even close to what AT&T has witnessed. It really is a special place, and I think the Giants fans need to take heed of that and recognize that this is not going to be here forever. We've had a sustained run that's lasted for quite some time, and it's just not always going to be here. So, you know, let's count our lucky stars if the Giants can actually make the playoffs this year.
Well, it also felt like a pennant race for the first time this past week. You know, it was such a strange year with how they jumped out so far in front and then just free fell. This was the first time it felt like that the Giants were just in the thick of a race this past week. And the sellout streak, and I know everybody can't see my hands, that goes on at AT&T, it felt fuller with all the things going on and the crowd getting into every single game. You know, I'm not so sure that a Wednesday afternoon game against the Rockies, or I'm sorry, Thursday afternoon game against the Rockies was with all those empty upper deck seats was a sellout, but right. It made the park feel fuller with all the different things that were going on every single game. Because, I mean, it doesn't look as full. I'm sure it's tickets sold and, you know, there's a requirement. And they got a hit. We don't know what it is, or I might have looked it up once. I don't remember. And that's why they have that sellout streak. But it felt like it actually, this rolls into something else I had noted on here. It felt like home again. And August itself, the Giants went 16-11. It was the third best in the National League.
Sure.
They averaged 4.86 runs per game, the most in the National League in the month of August. Can you believe that?
That doesn't sound like the team from June and July, or specifically July. It's incredible to think that they were under 500 at home just a little more than a week ago.
Yeah.
This late in the season. That's amazing. And to see Buster Posey raise his average from 278 to 299 in like a week and a half in August.
And he was able to sustain it at home because his splits this year before today's games, he was only hitting 258 at home while hitting 3.6 on the road. So to have him finally turn the corner and do it, at you know, that walk off, yeah. Yeah, that walk off the other night that game that you just knew, like you sensed he was in control. He carried the team much like he did 2 years ago. And I keep drawing those parallels and I hate to do it, but there's certain little things that just kind of remind you of that team, certain leadership things and the way that the offense is clicking. Joe Panic is another Marco Scudero in the two hole.
Yeah. No, he's been fantastic, hitting over 300, way better than Brandon Hicks or any other solution they've thrown out there at second base. He's been an absolute delight, you know, so far for the season. They got just September left. Even if he hits 200 overall, he's going to be hitting, you know, 270, 280 for his call-up. So that's an adequate replacement for Marco Scudero, who also took out Brandon Belt, by the way.
Panic, yeah, that's true. Panic, he's leading all NL rookies led all NL rookies in August in batting average, on base percentage, hits, and his 36 hits in the month of August were the most by a rookie since Buster back in July of 2010.
Oh, that's a good stat. I did not know that. That's fantastic. Yeah. Wow. 36 hits in August?
Yeah, he had 36 hits in August. And Pence is on a 14 or 15 game hit streak, as an aside. But 36 hits by Joe Panic in August. He had a lot of multi-hit games.
He did. Yeah.
Oh, so he's been a revelation. He's been more than a revelation. He's been a solid major leaguer in the two hole. I think that's another reason why the offense is starting to click. I've always talked about how Angel starts it up at the top of the lineup, but if there's nobody to keep him moving around, and now that Hunter can drop back down to the five hole, because we haven't trusted Mike Morris in the five hole for what, 2 months now?
Yeah. Yeah. No. Absolutely. I do want to actually look at the stats for the whole. With and without Pagan is pretty astounding. And granted, right when Pagan came back, they were still kind of treading water, but now they're kind of caught a bit of a hot streak. Clearly, this team is still above 500 with Pagan before he went down, and they're above 500 with him after he came back. It is just incredible to me. Even if he can't directly relate to every single win, there's something, and I'm objective scientist here, there's just something about his presence that seems to do the Giants good. And if he had not gone down this year, I swear to God, they'd be in first place right now.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And they might be in first place by like five games.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think? Which of the September call-ups, and there was a lot of them in the last 2 days, is going to make a difference? And I mean, I know this is just kind of throwing a dart at a board here, but you know, yeah. You got any inklings for like situational awareness
I have all the transactions.
Bochy will put them in.
Do you want me to mention anybody? Like mention them all? I have all of them written
down. Yeah, go ahead.
I totally could give them. All the call-ups, between call-ups and purchase contracts, there's 10 guys in total. Between before today's games and then after today's game, there was five more transactions. Right. They've called up outfielder Juan Perez, pitcher Mike Hickam, pitcher Hunter Strickland, which we saw today. Catcher GQ, who we also saw today. I'm sorry, Quiroz.
right fielder, GQ, baby.
I can't help it. That's just what he is. Right fielder Chris Dominguez. They brought back Adam Duvall. Gary Brown is getting another shot. They've got pitcher Eric Cordier, pitcher Chris Heston, and Bruce Bochy's kid is going to be called up to the big club.
Yeah. I was, you know.
What's going on?
I was seriously surprised by.
So was I. But I'll take an emergency catcher for a 15 inning game if they need it in September. I'm gonna spotlight. I guess Brown. I don't know if he's even gonna get many chances, but
I don't think so. Same with Bochy. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Duvall. I really thought Duvall was gonna step up more than he did. I was surprised that he couldn't hit for average as well as he could for maybe connecting to the long ball now and then. I think Strickland will have the most impact. We saw him today, and if he can have his head be okay as a young kid coming out of the bullpen, I mean, that kid fires bullets. And Eric Cordier, too. If he gets his shot in some games and it's not just mop-up activity, I remember seeing him in March, and his ball just zips. So I'd have to say I'd go pitching because I don't think there's a bench player that's going to make a difference for the Giants that got called up. So I'd have to say Strickland or Cordier.
Yeah, Strickland, you know, he gave up a couple of hits today, but he was averaging around 97, 98, and he touched 100 once. And that's just like, what? A Giant throwing that fast? This does not compute.
Well, we had it with Heath Hembree, but...
But even then, you know, Hembree wasn't actually touching that over the last year and a half. So that's why I'm not exactly totally depressed that they actually traded him away. Because,
I didn't mind that trade at all.
Yeah, he wasn't throwing the gas that he used to throw. So it was kind of like, well, you know, maybe it's declining stock that they got rid of. So, yeah, it is what it is.
PV's there now. I'm totally good with that trade.
Yeah. I'll say.
Well, sir, while I may not agree with what you say, I'll defend to the death your right to say it.
Sorry, I have to play with my soundboard. I have it right here.
Yeah, you're doing the drops pretty pretty well now.
You know, if you ever want to do play-by-play for the San Francisco Giants, just don't do what Dave Fleming did.
Renteria hits a high drive, deep left center field. David Murphy going back. He's on the warning track. It is gone!
I love that call. That is like one of the best calls ever. It's just like hitting his perfect puberty high note, you know?
And I enter high school tomorrow. Well, Well, I mean, it was so sudden. None of us, Edgar Renteria, you know, back then. It's funny because you look at the team; it's so different now than it was then.
Oh my God! I think Kruko has something to say to Flem.
Back off! Drink some milk.
I'm having fun with
the soundboard.
Yeah, it's a good little soundboard. So, in fact, this is out of context. Let's just relive Pablo's 3 home runs because he may not be with us next year.
He swings and he belts one. Deep center field. Jackson is going back. And goal! A home run! Number 3 for Pablo Sandoval. His first play at bats in this World Series. And Pablo Sandoval looks like the babe himself has come back to life.
And then Pablo ate him. No, you know, it's funny. He's the guy. That's a milestone that when you were talking about them earlier, that's one that I thought of is, you know, that's major league history that happened at AT&T Park.
I was there, too.
That was exact. I was about to say that you and fans got to witness.
Out of all of the I've seen some amazing games at AT&T, you know, from, well, even the Candlestick, but as far as AT&T, it started with the 2000 playoffs against the Mets. I saw JT Snow's home run that went off the tin. And, of course, they ended up losing that game to, you know, Roberto Benitez, which really sucked. I saw a game in the 2002 World Series against the Angels, which they lost at home. I saw Barry Bonds' 600th and 700th home runs. And then I saw his 73rd home run off of Russ Springer in 2001 to establish the final record, which, of course, it's all juiced, so who gives a shit anymore?
It's still a record.
And a couple other playoff games. But I do think that as far as what I've witnessed, because I did not see Kane's perfect game or Lidstrom's no-hitter or Sanchez's no-hitter, I do think it's that game one of the World Series because I took Caltrain up, and I just thought to myself, as I was drinking on the train, you know, heading up, going,
right, right.
Barry Zito against Justin Verlander. At least I'm going to see a World Series game, you know, and, you know, met my friend for drinks, and we were saying the same thing. We're like, we're here. Let's enjoy it. You know, let's not get wrapped up in the game because we know how it's going to end up. So let's just, you know, be here and not get stressed out about it because we're not going to be here very often. And sure enough, you know, it's just holy shit. Not only did Pablo hit his 3 home runs, which is the highlight of the game, but Zito had a hit and shut down the Tigers. And they won that game. And it was just, they blew him out. It was like, this team is better than I thought. Okay, we can do this.
And we're going to see all these highlights coming up this weekend when the Giants go to Detroit.
Exactly. Oh, my God. I thought of the same thing. They're on the TV. They are going to replay the 2 games they had in Detroit by far, including Scudero's hit to score. What's his face?
And Terrio.
Ryan Terrio, as he screams as he comes off the plate and he goes and puts on his rubber galoshes that are stained in red and unicorns. And just incredible stuff that happened in Detroit. So no doubt they're going to replay it because the Giants have got to relive every single moment they can because you never know when the next moment's going to come.
Yeah, that's why we always fall into it. I often wonder to myself, do I fall back on those? But you know what? Could be the middle of a historic run, so might as well revel in all of it.
Well, you know, we all joked about at the beginning of this year, you know, it's the anti-Brett Saberhagen, you know, sequence where you got 2010, you got 2012, and now you got 2014.
Right.
Well, 2011, they had virtually no shot. They were out of it at this point. Not mathematically, but they were pretty much out of it. 2013, they were pretty much out of it mathematically at this point.
Yeah.
So 2014 is different from those 2 odd years in the sense that they're not like, oh, totally out of it. So there is a little bit of hope there, considering they own the first wild card spot. That you never know. You never know. This that could continue that trend, and chances are low because even if they win the West, you know you gotta go through the NLDS, you gotta go through NLCS, and then you gotta go through the World Series. It's much, much, much more difficult than the teams prior to 1969 when they started division play. Prior to 1969, which is still the majority of the history of Major League Baseball, by the way, you know, like 90 years or 80 years or whatever it is.
Wow, it is.
You had two teams. One from the American League that had the best record, and one from the National League that had the best record. And they played the World Series, and that was it. There was no playoffs. There was the World Series. But in 1969, of course, you started division play. So you had four teams. So you had your LCSs. And, of course, that lasted all the way until the wild card started. But now, I mean, you got to go through three tiers if you're a division winner. And you got to go through an extra game if you're a wild card. And anything can happen in that run, as we've seen with the Giants, you know, down 3-1 to the Braves, two to nothing to the Reds, and 3-1 to the Cardinals. I mean, anything can happen. So, you know, we can all dream. You know, a little Giants fan in me is really hoping that this is going to be the magical year. Third time's a charm. We're going to do it.
Well, the one thing that's always in the Giants' corner, and today, notwithstanding with moves like Romo, is Bruce Bochy seems to have a sense of how to handle a series. And as strange as it sounds, I feel really confident that as long as the Giants get into the playoffs, they'll make noise. This won't be a team that will just disappear in a 3-1 fashion in the NLDS and score like 10 runs. No, if they get in, I think they'll make noise. So to me, that's the biggest reason to avoid that coin flip game. So I'm with you. I'm kind of dreamy about it now. A week ago, I would not have been.
No, I
was ready to write off the season a week ago. I'm really positive going forward, though. They look like a team that deserves to win the division, and that's when you feel good about it.
Which begs the question, like you pose, can the offense stay this hot through September?
Well, I mean, it's funny. We touched on it right before this with the Angel Pagan and mentioning Joe Panic. It seems that it's going to start there at the top. You know, Hunter Pence, too, no matter where he's being put in the lineup right now, he's going to get his hits. You know what? I think they're going to stay hot. To answer my own question, yeah, I think they're going to stay this hot because Pablo Sandoval is blowing my mind. I don't understand how he continues to do this. Like, what did he finally figure out?
He's almost 300, and he hit like zero the first 2 months.
Exactly. Like, he to me is the MVP of the team this season. I know Hunter is scoring runs and doing everything, you know, but Pablo just unbelievably is continuing to come through in clutch situations too. I don't remember the numbers were, but just recently he was hitting like 448 or something with runners in scoring position, which is ridiculous that he's just constantly driving in runs. He did it again today. I think they'll stay hot as long as, you know, it was mentioned earlier too, the meat of the order keeps it going, but I don't even think that's necessary. I think it's possible that, you know, Pagan has an off day, but that day Panic, Pence, and maybe Susak carry the offense. And, you know, another day maybe Posey and Blanco carry the offense. That's a question I should have posed. Is Gregor Blanco your starting left fielder?
Great question. I mean, he has been hot lately. He's hitting over 250 now, but if you look over the last 2 months, he's hitting basically 300. And the team itself is hitting 249, so he's above the team average. And so
He was the starting left fielder. Right. He was the starting left fielder of a World Series winning ball club just 2 years ago.
That's true.
And Michael Morris just doesn't – I mean, we all have now figured out why it was so cheap of a contract. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't seem to have it. And I'd rather have Blanco's glove out there. Look at those games that we talked about last week at home. How different would those games have been had Blanco not been able to run down those balls in the outfield?
Oh,
had it been Michael Morris out there? Yeah, exactly. It would have been a clusterfuck. But because, you know, Blanco was able to run those balls down and get on base in the meantime, I think he's your starting left fielder from here on out, just like Panic's your starting second baseman. And Andrew Susak can fill in more than admirably behind the plate.
You know, I mean, I love Michael Morris, and he's just been – he's hitting well this year. Obviously, his RBI potential has gone down over the last couple of months, but he's not hitting 250 or anything like that. He's still 270-something. The RBIs and the power has dropped off a little bit or considerably, but
yeah.
I think it's, for me, it's a situational matchup. I have no problem with Bochy 2 out of 3 games, let's say, against a righty starting Blanco. Certainly against all lefties, I want Morrison there. But probably, you know, half the righties or a third of the righties, because he does have that pop potential. Blanco has his 3 home runs this year. And by the way, we saw that 2-run home run on Friday night, which was he had hit a home run at AT&T 2 games prior. That was his first home run at home since Matt Cain's perfect game in June of 2012.
Wow.
So it was more than 2 years since he had hit a home run at home. And then he hit 2 in 3 games. And we saw the second one. We're like, you guys are already up by 8 and you hit one now? Okay, we'll take it, I guess. But how about you do that when we're like tied or something?
Yeah, he does. He did like today. He struck out looking in the 9th when he could have fouled a pitch off.
Yeah, that was definitely a strike. He complained a little bit about that, but I was like, dude, no, you went from 3-0 to full count, and yes, struck out looking. So that, you know, it is what it is.
I do. I think he should stay starting left field. You talk about Morse. Morse will get his at bats playing first base because nobody knows what Brandon Belt's status is going to be. And then those other days, Posey, you know, is going to be there. And like I said, Susak has filled in admirably in the catcher's role.
Susak, he seems to have been fine.
Yeah, he's has a good approach at the plate. He seems to be a good target for the pitchers. They don't seem to be, you know, having these crazy bad innings or anything like that. And the fact that Hector's gone, the Giants really needed a backup like that.
Yeah, no.
So I think Moore still gets his at-bats. I think he just gets him at first base, and Blanco gets to run around in left field for the rest of the season. That's what I'd like to see.
I have no problem with that because Blanco's defense has been, you know, invaluable, because sometimes you see Morse out there, he's been left a little too long and he just cannot get to balls that absolutely should be caught. Not even like spectacular catches by Blanco, just routine running catches towards the fence or the line. Morse just can't do that. He just can't. I mean, that, I know that's been a huge weakness of his, but you know, I'd love to see, I mean, I guess I'm sure the WAR for Morse is higher than Blanco, but at the same time, his defensive WAR, of course, is much, much higher than Morris's. And so I think when you have a small sample size and you come down to these games that are so crucial, I don't really have a problem with Blanco going in, at least for the second half of the game, if not starting against some of these righties. So I agree with you. I wouldn't have said that maybe a month ago, but
yeah, me neither.
But Blanco's been very, very hot of late, so I have no problems with that. All right, so let's see, where are we at? So we already said, can this offense stay through hot through September? So we're at Tweet At Me, bruh. So I had...
Oh, I don't have one.
Well, that's all right. That's all right. It's all good. So I had a few choice tweets this week, but I have to admit, our own Willie Dills had a good one. He tweeted this right after the Rockies won tonight with their walk-off celebration, 10-9, and he said, I think when a team is 23 games back and gets a walk-off, they should just walk the fuck off. What are you celebrating? you know what? The funny thing is that right when it happened, I'm a bitter Giants fan. Don't get me wrong. I am bitter. But even when I see other teams doing it to other teams I don't give a shit about, I do think that. Like, yeah, you're 20 games back. You're not in the playoffs. They're not in the playoffs, or even if they are, why are you like pretending like you cured cancer? What the hell is going on here? And I think it's just it's a culture thing, don't you think?
I mean, I agree. Just, it is a culture thing.
When you
thing
have a walk off, it doesn't matter if you're in first place or last place with one win. A walk off is a walk off is a walk off. It's an excuse for the whole team to go out and form their little brigade in their tunnel, and an excuse for the hitter to take off his helmet and hold it for a second and go, holy shit, look at me, and toss his helmet into the stands or whatever, and then hop on home plate as he's getting pounded, then get a little Gatorade, and I don't know. It's just turned into this whole cultural thing. You look at replays, and I'm dead serious, just 20 years ago, even 15 years ago, certainly 50 years ago, and guys hit walk-off home runs, there's no celebration. Except for like the shot heard around the world and those kind of playoff situations. You get regular season games as a home run,
You get guys coming to the plate, and there's like a couple shake. Oh, yeah, hey, good job. Yeah. Hey, you want to go get the post-game spread? Yeah, let's do it. There's nothing like spectacular about it. It's just it's just a baseball game.
When you have things like MLB Network, and I'm watching Quick Pitch right now, you have things like MLB Network who hit the Budweiser walk off a winner today.
Yeah,
it glorifies it. And, you know, it's not that I don't totally hate it. To me, it's more of a we all just went through the ringer for a battle together and we accomplished it. But I know what you mean with like histrionics and Prince Fielder back in the day. Remember Milwaukee with the bowling pins.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, I think that that's part of it. And I think there's even outfield wall advertising that says walk off a winner or something like that. Maybe even at AT&T right now. At least maybe last year it was, there was a whole Budweiser campaign. So I think it gets fostered. It's part of it. And I don't want to be like so sociological here, but it's kind of a societal thing too. Think about how much more we celebrate the most little accomplishments along the way that we didn't necessarily used to do. And now we celebrate everything. And I think it's just part of that culture is that like we all just celebrate everything. And we've turned into such a culture that enjoys, you know, I mean, things get viewed. And even this podcast, anything I write, anything you write viewed on how many clicks or views did I get. That's so it's like, true. You know, how many views can I get for this?
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it, too, is it's just, you know, it's part of the accepted way that we all celebrate everything nowadays.
Yeah.
Next on TortureCast is your child being beaten by San Francisco Giants.
That's basically like that.
Giggity, 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 giggity.
All right, so we are to our new favorite guy. So for me, I mean, it was fun watching Hunter Strickland. I want him so bad. No, watching Hunter Strickland tonight. Throwing 98, 99, even touching 100 on one pitch. So, yeah, he had a couple of hits off him. It's not like he was fooling anyone. But I had really little idea that this guy threw this much gas. I had heard a couple of blips about him. But it was pretty cool to see. And his mechanics, to me, don't even look that clean. Which, you know, who knows if he's going to change his delivery at all. He's in the major leagues now, and I'm sure that's not going to happen. But it seems to me he could actually get a couple of miles, you know, on that fastball. But a San Francisco Giant throwing 100 miles an hour, that has not happened in a very, very long time. So what do you think about him?
Yeah, we're not used to that at all. I liked what I saw so far. I can't recall if I had seen him previously at all. He's the kind of guy that can impress for future hope. He's the kind of guy you can look at and yeah, exactly. And think about, okay, maybe we won't have to worry about Sergio Romo and his fluttering slider. Maybe now we can just have a guy that comes in and throws gas on the back end. You know, it's that kind of thing. Somebody, I can't remember who it is. Somebody equated him to looking like Rob Nen tonight.
Not a bad call, actually.
I didn't get, I was outside of the room, so I wasn't seeing much of his appearance today.
Yeah.
But I think somebody talked about his slider looked pretty good as well, coming off of his fastball. So I don't know. I mean, from what I've seen and read Strickland, I mean, it's hit or miss. So I think it's one of those we get to look at and hope for a future closer or something like that.
That's right. All right. So we should hate this guy, and I'm going to give this to the Coors Field special. Justin Morneau, Blackman, and pretty much all the Rockies and Coors Field in general, because it's a portal to Hades. It really is. This place is just, they should not play baseball there. It's just, so many things can happen that are so random and so unfair on both sides, granted. I mean, we've seen the Giants do things to the Rockies that the Rockies did to the Giants tonight, but it's just, baseball should not be played at a mile above sea level. Unless they're in a pressurized dome. I mean, honestly, it's just, it's ridiculous because this is not baseball. If you had that game or a myriad of other games played at Coors Field, played at sea level or close to it, the result, or at least the result could have been that, but certainly the actions would not have happened in that same scenario today. The place is just bullshit, as far as I'm concerned, no matter how you look at it. Because, look, they say, oh, we have a humidor because, you know, it's dry and the drier the ball is and there's less friction because there's fewer air, you know, oxygen and nitrogen molecules in the air for resistance. So that's why the ball travels 10% further than it would at sea level. So what do? Oh, we move the fences back. Oh, okay. So there's maybe fewer home runs, which, by the way, there's not.
No.
But what you do is you spread out the outfield. So now you have the dinks and the bloops and whatever falling in at much more frequency, same with the gappers and down the line and everything like that. So, yeah, you already have more home runs than any normal field, but you also have more hits in general. And it's just, you know, they call it the Coors Field special, blah, 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 blah. Oh, they have a 5-run lead. It's not safe. Everyone keeps joking about it. But at what point does Major League Baseball say, you know what? When the seventh best hitter on the Rockies is still hitting 270, we got to stop this. It's ridiculous, man. I can't stand the place. It's an anomaly in baseball. It's a cancer as far as I'm concerned. And I wish they would move the goddamn team to some place in freaking Kansas for all I care. Just not in freaking Denver. I'm sick of it. And it's not just about the Giants loss today. It's really not what it is. It's just the amount of baseball, you know, that's inflated in terms of statistics and the unreality of baseball in Denver. It's just an anomaly that should be removed. I'm a little passionate about it, obviously.
Yeah, you seem to be. It's because it is a totally different game up there. It's like you said, when these 10-9 games happen, it's because of the little bloops that get in before the home runs that do get out. And that's exactly why it's so anomalous, because, you know, you get the Earl Weaver special, a bloop, bloop, and a blast all the time at Coors Field, and it totally skews the numbers. I don't know. I'm torn. I'm always torn on Coors Field. As much as I enjoy watching certain games there, it's a home field advantage that the Rockies have never been able to take advantage of, though.
They're true.
Just as susceptible as anybody else. Yep. And I've always wondered if that's why it hasn't ever come up more than it has, is because if it was more of an appreciable home field advantage for the Rockies, I think that, you know, others would think that way. But then again, maybe I don't remember the years that the Rockies were good, and maybe they were good at home those years. But that's an anomaly in and of itself, because the Rockies have been good like 3 times.
Yeah, 3 times. They did make the World Series 1 time, right? So
yeah,
pretty incredible that they actually won the National League pennant 1 year. But I agree with you there. I agree with you in the fact that they are bit by the same bug that they bite others with. And for all the inflation of their hitting statistics, for guys that, you know, you put on any other team are going to be hitting 30, 40, 50 points less, their pitchers, of course, are a half a run to a run higher than they would normally be. So it's a trade-off in both ways. So I think if you're a hitter and you sign in Colorado, you're pretty happy. I think you're pretty happy. You're a pitcher going to Colorado, you had nowhere else to go.
Well, that's what blows my mind. I don't understand how this team has never been better. I would think that I would want my organization to use that field as an advantage. But maybe that's just the baseball gods' way of saying that, yes, you have this advantage, but we're not going to let you be the only team to use it. Not that I believe in baseball gods or anything. But,
oh, no. No, of course not. We don't pray to them and sacrifice chickens or anything. All right, so who do you hate?
Well, I kind of joke here, because LaTroy Hawkins has been the like winning pitcher or saving pitcher in all of those Colorado games you're talking about that they blew this season, and it just strikes me as amazing that an 80-year-old man can keep getting wins and saves in Major League Baseball. I'm always shocked when they show the behind the center field camera shot that LaTroy's cane isn't laying on the ground behind the mound.
I think you're exaggerating. I think he's only like 70.
Yeah, that's true. But he's been collecting Social Security for like a good at least 5 years now.
No, I'll give you
so,
that. Yeah,
it's kind of fun, because I remember LaTroy from his Cubs days when he was once upon a time good with the Twins, sure. And I'll never forget learning that the beat writers had nicknamed LaTroy Latrine Hawkins.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was one of those behind-the-scenes things I never got, you know, and I was like, okay, Latrine, because everything he touched went to the toilet, and it's the same as you hating, like, you know, Coors Field, it's why does this happen? Why is he only good against the Giants? I'm granted he gave up 2 runs today, but why is he only getting things done? And it's kind of throw your hands up like, you know, screw the Rockies. It's just the whole Rockies in general. You know, the Rockies are that pesky, yeah. That like pesky little kid that just will not leave your heels.
Some teams just have certain matchups against certain teams every year, and you know, the Rockies have the Giants number. The Giants, I think haven't they split? I mean, there are two games left, so they've played 17, right?
Yeah, they have now.
Yeah, I gotta look at the record. I actually don't know, but I know that's the Giants have at least lost those 6. Granted, yeah. I'm sure they've lost at least a couple other normal type games, but so even if the Giants are 500 or even above 500 against the Rockies, they should have demolished them this year with those games, and it just didn't happen. So sometimes this happens. I mean, you get the Astros have winning records against other teams that have winning records. It's baseball, man. It's just the way it is. And
7-8.
7-8. So there you go.
7-8.
So 7.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. So 8-9. I'm sorry. 7-8 was before play. 8-9 then. They're 8-9 and 17 games.
And that makes sense because they have 2 games left, which would make the 19 games.
Right. So, I said the 7-8, it added to 15.
So at best, the Giants are going to go 10-9. Yeah. Right? And to think that out of those 9 losses so far, six of them, at least off the top of our heads, between the two of us, are games that they absolutely, rightfully, 9 times out of 10 or more, should have won. I mean, the Giants could, if they had maximized their opportunity, be, only 3 losses against the Rockies this year? That could have been 14-3 against them. But they certainly should have been something like 11-6. They should not be 8-9. That's just embarrassing. But we know how that all worked out. All right, so last little segment here, why we'll win it all. And I'm going to go ahead and go first here. And I'm just going to say real quickly, if we don't play any more games at Coors Field. But unfortunately, we have 2 more games. So
yeah, right.
Apparently,
scheduling people don't like your, yeah.
Anyway, we just beat that horse to death. So what about you?
Because AT&T Park feels like home again. It feels like they finally have a home field advantage. And it goes back to everything we talked about with the milestones and just the general vibe on the shores of McCovey Cove lately. It just seems like it's electric again. You know, there's a sense of this is our house, as the Giants fans feel, and the Giants are stepping up and responding and using the field to their advantage. Because how did they win most of last week? It was pitching. It was pitching and timely hitting, and that's going to be the formula, obviously, for any good team, but that's going to be the formula to do it. So it's because AT&T feels like home again, and they're able to put together the right parts of the ball club to win games right now.
All right, that's awesome. So what the Giants have in the coming week, they have 2 more against Colorado, then they have an off day, and then they head into Detroit. So that's going to be a tough 3 games before they have another off day on Monday and head back home, where they're going to face Arizona and Los Angeles. Now, Willie and I, and maybe Ben, are going to be going to the September 10th game against Arizona. That's 2 Wednesdays from now. And we have some exciting news about that, which we kind of talked about on our bonusode. But it looks like we're going to have clubhouse access to that game. And on September 13th, which is a Saturday, against the LA Dodgers. So hopefully we will, in fact and indeed, have clubhouse access pre- and post-game for those games. So that's going to be pretty exciting, not only for us, because we've never had that before, but also we're going to try and maximize our opportunity, because we are not going to take this for granted. And we're going to try and bring as many interviews to you as we can. We certainly are excited about potentially tracking down Hunter Pence, whom we've never been able to track down. We've talked to him during BP, but not, you know, a formal interview, during Gamers Night, which is September 10th, which they're giving away an Assassin's Creed figurine. So he's a big gamer, of course. He streams his games on Twitch. He plays a lot of Assassin's Creed and Hearthstone and World of Warcraft and all those kind of games. So we're really looking forward to hopefully cornering him somewhere in the in the clubhouse while he's playing a video game, maybe, and talking to him about his gaming and everything like that. So I would say look forward to that. Before then, of course, we will have another Torture Cast, number 70. This is number 69 tonight. Next Monday. I know, number 69. We didn't have a player to name it tonight. We're running out of numbers, man. You know, obviously 70 is going to be Kontos, but 69, not a single San Francisco Giant has ever been or has ever worn number 69, and I think for pretty good reason. So
good reason for that.
Pretty good reason for that. So anyway, I just want to let you know that you can we are actually streaming this live right now on YouTube. We have several viewers right now, and we're going to be trying to do this every single episode as we close out the season, and you know, hopefully we bridge this into next season with a really good following and some better technology. So we're going to bring some really good stuff to you guys. You can follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can follow our website where we stream this live on YouTube at TortureCast.com. You can also follow me at ChadK21. You can follow Eric at 2Hits. That's with the number 2. And are you still writing?
Yeah, 2OutHits.
What did I say? 2OutHits?
You said 2Hits.
2Hits. He's at 2Hits. No, at 2OutHits. Because of course, it's about
I'm back
the 2Out RBIs.
Yeah, I'm back writing over on 2OutHits.com. You can find me over there. I'm doing my own thing right now. I got 2OutHits up and running again, so you can find some
That's
things.
Awesome.
I got a new post up a few days ago, and I'll probably have something, a couple more things this week.
Awesome. So follow him at 2OutHits with the number 2. You can follow our absent co-host tonight, Willie Gregory, or Willie Dills Gregory, at Willie Dills. You can also follow Ben at Fried Duck. So for Willie, for Ben, and for Eric, this is Chad signing off episode 69. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TortureCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.